All right, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Beauty and the Beast PT and Strength and Conditioning Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Dr. Ross Childs.
How's it going, guys? As always, it's a pleasure being here, and I appreciate everyone who listens every week.
We are going to be, first of all, going to be releasing episodes a little bit later for a few weeks. Ross is teaching a class on Wednesday afternoons, which is when our normal recording time would be. So they'll probably be coming out Thursday nights, no later than Friday morning. It'll just kind of depend at that point about when I'm able to post them. So Thursday nights or Friday mornings from here on out. So just be on the lookout for that. We're going to do a little bit of a different episode today. So you've kind of gotten to know us in little bits and pieces here and there. We talked a little bit about our background in the first episode, and you know, we drop little things here and there, but we haven't really had a podcast where we've really gotten to know us. So what we're going to do today is we're just going to go through some, like, basically we're going to shoot the shit for the next hour. I got some questions lined up that we're going to, you know, mull over, bat around, and just kind of all that good stuff. So
yeah, I mean, there's a 700% guarantee that we're going to veer off course like we always do. And, yeah, you know, so it should be fun. It'll be a different approach, but, you know, a little more on the lighter side, but I think it'll still be fun.
Yeah. So before we get started, let's kind of go back through a quick reintro that we have, you know, some more people that are listening now than maybe at the beginning about, you know, who we are, what our background is, and that kind of stuff. We'll motor through that pretty quick. But so, Ross, why don't you start? Just a little bit of your background, you know, experience, education, that just that kind of general
stuff. Yeah, absolutely. So by trade, I'm a physical therapist. I went to Franklin Pierce and graduated 12 years ago with my degree in physical therapy. Prior to that, I actually went to Salem State College, got my degree in exercise science with a concentration in strength and conditioning. So I've always been in this field. I've worked as a trainer, as a strength and conditioning specialist. So it just felt like physical therapy was a natural progression for me. For the past 10 years, I've been working in the Concord area, primarily working in sports and outpatient orthopedics. And my specialty, you know, a lot of people aren't aware of this, but my specialty and kind of what makes me different is I'm an orthopedic physical therapist that specializes in manual therapy. So all that means is that really my assessment techniques are with my hands, and I assess the body with a lot of hands-on techniques, which may look very similar to massage therapy or may look very similar to chiropractic, but it's all just hands-on manual work. And you know, I think Adam can talk about how it's so it can be very beneficial.
Yeah, the manual therapy stuff is one of the main reasons that you and some of the other PTs, and you know, a couple other PTs in the area are the ones that, like, I've gotten to know a little bit more, and I don't want to say respect a little bit more, because I don't mean to say it like I don't respect other PTs, but why I'm more liable to send people to you and want to get treated by you guys because of the way that you approach all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it also helps when there's a background of strength and conditioning. You know, I think you have also seen that there's plenty of PTs out there that don't have that background, you know, and probably a lot of PTs that oppose some of the principles of strength and conditioning. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll be the first one to admit, PT school does not prepare you for performance, you know, and that's your specialty. So, you know, when you're able to have a strength and conditioning coach like yourself who understands rehab principles, and when you have a PT who understands strength and conditioning, you know, we're able to talk the same language. So we can take someone from injury all the way through the end of their performance, and that's what has made this, you know, a wonderful blending of the professions.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why we kind of wanted to start this, right? So my background is I graduated with a degree in exercise physiology from Plymouth State in 2013. I've been working for Get Fit since 2014, so I did some internship and stuff. So I'm a certified strength and conditioning specialist, nationwide certification. With that bachelor's degree, and I've been in the field for, you know, about 9 years now, 8 or 9 years now. So working with Get Fit as of 2 years ago now. I also started my own online coaching business, Gray Method Training, so that's been going as well. And the reason that we started this is just, like, in talking, being able to blend these two, because from my experience, there's been a lot of, you know, like when I started working with you and working with Sarah and stuff, there was a lot more back and forth than previously working with, you know, PTs. We would have some back and forth with PTs, but most of our experience was a client coming in saying like, oh, my knee hurts. I went to go see my PT and they told me X, Y, and Z, and us having to reactively adjust to those recommendations or, you know, so, and again, those recommendations a lot of the time weren't built on the principles that you and I are talking about. So it was a lot of, you know, my knee hurts, my PT says I shouldn't be squatting. So then we're running around trying to like give them 50 different upper body exercises because they're afraid to squat, you know, so kind of blending together that, you know, especially when somebody understands strength and conditioning principles and is also a physical therapist, gives us that added level of like, okay, this person knows what we're thinking and has the PT background. So I know that if I give this person a squat or something like that, because, you know, Ross or whoever said that it should, you know, there's nothing to worry about, just be careful and look for these couple things, we can be confident in knowing that, okay, they can do that. It's not just that they need to pretend that their right leg doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think we found out early on just from a lot of our in-depth conversations, you know, we spoke the same language, you know, and for me that's huge because quite often that's not the case, you know. Even sometimes when I talk with other PTs who don't necessarily understand the human function and form the way that I look at it, you know, some of them look at me like I'm batshit crazy, you know. So for you to be able to look at it as a total system, you know, it makes it a lot easier for me because I can come to you and say, oh, the knee pain's caused by the ankle, which is caused by the hip, you know, and you'll come back and say, I thought it was the ankle or the hip too. So that just lets us know that we're on the same frequency when it comes to this stuff. So it's a lot easier for me to know performance is there's not going to be any setbacks because right. You know exactly what to look for.
Yeah, so that's a little bit of the background, and now that we're done patting each other on the backs for a few minutes, let's get into the fun stuff. So we're just going to ask some questions. We're going to bat some stuff back and forth, some fun stuff, some stuff that's related to PT and strength and conditioning, some stuff that's not super related, just to kind of, you know, have a fun, laid back kind of thing. So the first thing I'm going to start with is I wrote down some questions, some different things for us to bat back and forth. Ross hasn't seen any of them yet, and I'm sure they'll bring some up for him. So I have a few to start with, a few kind of would you rather. So you got two options. All right, you can decide which one you would rather. He's already smiling. I'm not sure he knows what this is. Some of them are.
I can only imagine.
So my first one, I came up with this because of my absolute hate for running. Personally, not hate for the action of running, but I just am not a runner. So here, you've got two options. Would you rather have to run 15 miles tomorrow? So no prep, no nothing. You just have to wake up tomorrow and run 15 miles. Or you have 4 months to prepare to survive 10 minutes in a 12 by 12 foot room with a 400-pound black bear. 400-pound bear, you only have to survive for 10 minutes.
How old's the bear? I mean, are we talking like a cub?
I mean, 400 pound. I guess I don't know.
I don't know how big the adults get.
Yeah, I'm thinking like a black bear. I'm not talking like grizzly bear, like something that's, you know, like you got no chance.
Are we talking like the trained ones at Clark's Trading Post, the ones that follow commands? Or
No. Oh, I mean, they don't have to be like bloodthirsty, but just like your normal, like wandered into the ring out in the wild.
15 miles, huh? I mean, or 10 minutes with a, 10 with a minutes. Bear?
10 minutes and you got 4 months to prep. You have 4 months to read about stress signals for bears, how to train them, like what to look for. Wrestling, well, immense. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, here's the thing, you know, and again, it always goes, it depends, you know, and I don't have a deep hatred for running. I just don't like it.
Right,
you
know, right.
15 miles is a lot. However, I can pace myself with a run, whereas I can't control if that black bear is going to go fucking ape shit when I'm in the ring with them and he mauls my face and I die. So I think for this one, as much as I don't want to run 15 miles, my risk of death is next to nothing because I can control it, where I can't control the bear. Now, same question for you.
I'm taking the bear.
I was going to say, I already knew that. I'm taking the bear. I mean, just the way that you put it out there for me, I figured that would be the case.
I mean, it's probably a very stupid decision, I'll read up on bears. I'll read up on bears. Like, that's gonna like do.
Read
I'll
up carry on, some, carry no, some read berries. Up on fighting bears.
Yeah, fighting bears.
I mean, you watch Nat Geo, or it's going to tell you what bears. They do in the wild.
Yeah, bring some salmon with me, just throw it off to the side. I don't know. I'll figure something out. I got 4 months to come up with a plan. As long as I don't have to run 15 miles, it's fine.
Yeah, that's... I'm going to have to go with the 15 miles. I mean, it's going to suck. I mean, 10 minutes does sound delightful. But again, 15 miles, you know, it's not a timed race. It's not like you're asking me to do it in an hour and a half, so I can pace myself, and so I'm gonna go with the option that may not kill me.
This gives you a little insight into how much I can't stand running. It's just not my.
Yeah, I perfectly understand, but again, I don't know. You know, in my spare time, I haven't fought a bear before as much as I thought about it.
You're definitely making the smarter decision. There's no doubt about that in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been risk averse growing up. So, like, when my brothers were jumping off of the garage roof, or when they were climbing over the fence, I would walk around it. You know, so I'm always, I mean, I'll feel like shit after the run, but I'll still be alive.
But I'll still have a leg.
Yeah, so that's, and I won't have claw marks across my face. I don't have to worry about a 4-inch gash from a tooth sinking into my shoulder. I'm going with running for this one, as much as I don't want to admit that.
All right, so you got running, I got bear. All right, next one. You have the option of training with one of two implements for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, option one, a Bosu ball. Option two, a shake weight. You only get to pick one.
Oh, Bosu ball.
Bosu ball?
Yeah.
I was hoping that would be a little bit harder, but no.
No, that one's easy. The shake weight. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, one, just the whole thought of the shake weight is absolutely nuts. But the Bosu ball is actually a very versatile tool that you can use. You know, I think it's great for shoulder stabilization. So this was a softball. You lobbed that one into me.
Okay. I couldn't think of a more ridiculous. Okay, let's. So what's a more... What's a more ridiculous weight piece of exercise equipment
than the shake weight?
Worse than the shake weight. I don't think you can come up with one worse than the shake weight. I don't even know if there's anything
someone
close.
Made a lot of money off of that.
It's just crazy.
It's nuts.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Someone must have been hopped up on something to think that was a good idea.
Right, yeah. Or somebody just did it as a joke, and somebody who didn't think it was a joke bought into it somehow.
However, you know, obviously their marketing worked off, because here we are still talking about it.
I know.
So
yeah.
they're the ones getting the last laugh.
I guess so, yeah.
So, no, but I actually like the Bosu ball a lot. So you can use it for a lot of stabilization exercises. You could always do, you know, leg variations on it, whether it's a split squat or you can do plank variations around the world. So it's actually used a lot in physical therapy. So,
oh, okay.
I'm very comfortable with the Bosu ball.
That is also my choice. I mean, it's an obvious decision in my opinion. I just was trying to think of something as ridiculous as possible, hence the shake weight, but I actually don't mind the Bosu ball either. I think it's misused
at times,
which is why it gets such a bad rap, but if you're using it for the right type of thing, it can be
helpful. I mean, well, let's just talk about how do you believe it's misused.
I believe it's misused because people try and create instability before they even have strength in a given exercise. Like, they can't do a goblet squat to a full depth, but instead of working on doing a goblet squat to a full depth, they try and do a goblet squat on a Bosu ball. It's like, why?
Well, and I think when they stand on the actual Bosu side,
yeah,
I think that's terrible. Like, I've seen people sidestepping onto a Bosu, jumping on and bounding off of one. I think that's asinine. But I like flipping it up so that you're standing on the platform
where I can hold on
to it. You know, that's for me, that's how I would use it.
That's so, how I've always used
it. Yeah, if
past.
You said you can only do it this way, great, fine. I'm already comfortable with it, and I like to implement it in, especially with push-ups or rotator cuff rehab. I always get the people, you know, on the Bosu to create stabilization because it's in a weight-bearing position.
All right, so last one. I'm thinking this one will be a little bit harder. So, you have two options. You can either A, have super strength, but it's only in your pinky finger. Okay, that's option one. Or, you're able to fly, but you can only fly as fast as you can walk, and it's only about 6 to 8 inches off the ground.
I mean, what the hell am I going to need super strength for that I only need it in my pinky?
Yeah, but when are you going to need to fly when it's going the same pace as you walk and you're only 6 inches off the ground?
I want to know.
Because you're wearing suede shoes.
I know. I want to know what was going through your head when you came up with these two.
I don't get all the credit for this one. I've heard this one somewhere else, too. I don't remember where I heard it, but I heard it somewhere, and I'm like, that's a great one. Because sure. They're both
Now, outside ridiculous. Of the pinky, do I have normal human mm-hmm. strength?
Normal human strength. You lift a piano with your pinky, but you can do your normal. Like, yeah, you're the same strength as you are now. Otherwise.
I don't need to fly that low to the ground. I mean, flying slow, I think, is fine, but flying low to the ground. I mean, I'd rather have insane human strength in my pinky and normal strength everywhere else. It functionally, it's going to suit me better than being able to fly like a hover. Gnat. Yeah, I mean, I would just buy a hoverboard if I wanted to do that.
Right. I think at that point, it's pretty much just kind of like a parlor trick. Yeah. Look what I can do.
Like, just hang out there right, and yeah. people stand on you like a skateboard? No, thanks. Get walked on. No.
Yeah, I think I'd go with that. I think the flying would be cool, but yeah, I think in a functional capacity, in like an everyday capacity, the super strength in the pinky finger makes way more sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, now here's the thing, too. I always thought teleportation would be cool. Would teleportation be worth it if you aged 1 year every time you did it?
I did not think that was where you were going to go with that. I think so. That's tough.
Let's say you age, you like the teleport 25 it. Times, you age 25 years.
Oh, yeah.
What if you only got 50 years left? Ugh. None of us know that, but right. Let's just assume you're young and healthy and you want to live to the average age of, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You're using a little too much too soon. So now you'd have to pick and choose where you want right. to use that teleportation.
I'm just laughing because like I'm thinking like, oh yeah, then I'd only use it like once. I'd probably use it like four times in my entire life. When realistically what I'd probably do is like, there'd be like 3 weeks in a row where I'd be like, okay, I'll use it again, but then I won't do it again for at least like 10 years. Yeah. And then
I'll at least live 47 more years. It's yeah. fine. I don't need 50 more. But then it's like, oh man. Wish I had a coffee right now. I'm just going to go to Dunk's real quick.
Right.
And then come back and it's like, ah, shit, now I'm 1 year older just because of that.
Right. I would hope I'd have some self-control. Like, I really want to go to, like, you know, some places in Europe. I really want to go to, like, Greece someday or Italy or, you know, just, like, a bunch of different. So I would think that it would be cool to be able to use it for something like that. But at the same time, like, do I have the self-control to actually only do it once?
Well, then it's, let's waste 1 year to teleport into a bank vault, take the money, teleport to Europe, and now you're only 2 years older.
That's a good point, yep.
I mean, so now we're talking, because now we're talking strategy.
Right.
And you'd have to stay out of the United States for a while. So you'll probably never be allowed back, actually.
Well, what if you just teleport to Europe and then go back? Then you just fly wherever you want to.
Yeah, now we.
I feel like this can't possibly be that simple. But
now, did we still steal money from the bank?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I left that part out. I mean, like, what if you were in the U.S., you teleported to some giant bank in Europe, wherever all the greedy politicians keep all their stocks. All right,
so that's different now. It's just you don't want to get caught while you're over in Europe, and you'd have to get back to the United States
right.
before that happens. All right, I see where you're at. Okay, I can buy that. You know, or you teleport down to. Like one of the southern continents where there's a lot of drug lords, you steal their money.
There you go. Yep.
Then you go to Europe, and then you fly back.
That's true. What are we talking about? A bank?
Yeah, exactly.
Are we stupid?
Yeah.
No drug lord's gonna have the technology to catch somebody who can teleport.
True, but
it's a sentence I never thought I'd be saying in my entire life.
If they catch you, they have lots of guns.
That's true.
So now it's like at least at a bank, you're in the vault. You know, you better hope that there's no laser or something or a trip wire.
Yeah, so we're both in agreement that drug lord is the way to go.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, you just have to make sure that you teleport in at the right time.
Yeah.
Everyone's sleeping. You know where you're going. And then you teleport right the hell out of
there. So then it might actually be like 4 years of your life. Because if you want to do it the right way and make sure that you're good, you got to go in, you got to scope, you got to go like 5 miles away, come in, you got to scope it out for a couple weeks, you're out. You're back and you're out again. Otherwise, you're risking it. What if you show up and the room is full of people just holding AKs?
Well, here's the thing.
You grab one, you got one stack of $100 bills and you teleport out of there? You lost 2 years of your life for $300?
You accidentally realize you grabbed one brick of something else.
I know.
Whoops. So now,
everything's in black bags. I don't know what to grab. Shit. 100 kilos of cocaine again. It's another 2 years gone.
Now.
We gotta label this shit.
Now here's the thing. Let's say you're able to get your hands on like 70. So let's say you have to waste 4 years.
Yeah.
What amount of drug lord's money would you be willing to steal that wasting 4 years of your life would be worth it?
4 years? I would think it's got to be over 10 mil.
I was thinking it has to be a substantial amount. Oh, yeah, I'm never working again.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It has to be enough that I don't know. Is 10 mil enough?
No.
I'm trying to think of how... No. No.
No, I was already in the ballpark of like 70 mil or above.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to figure out what I could realistically get away with.
Well, I mean, I just want Jeff Bezos money.
Yeah.
So if I, but no drug lord has that.
Right. Are we missing the easy equation here? Do we just teleport into his house and grab the black card?
A lot of his money is all in stocks and stuff like that. So you'd have to sneak in, forge his name, sign over his 15% of the company to you.
Can you imagine? Jeff Bezos wakes up one morning, he's like, how is this guy own 15%?
That's weird, because no one can own 15% but me.
Right.
Newsflash, dickhead.
Not anymore.
Thanks to my
wizard friend.
That'd be worth 4 years. Yeah. Because he's worth however many billion.
I don't even know. Ridiculous.
His company's valued at over a trillion.
Is it really? Yeah. I'm not surprised. I didn't know it was Apple.
That and Apple, I think, are valued over a trillion.
Yeah.
And it won't be long before Tesla gets there. So.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. All right. So we are obviously putting a price on our life.
Right?
We're willing to give up years for money. And some people would say money doesn't make you happy.
Yeah. I always think of, do you ever watch Daniel Tosh?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There's a line, he's talking about, they say money doesn't buy happiness. You ever seen have you ever seen a sad person riding a wave runner? Nope, not a lot of frowns on a wave runner.
Yeah.
Money don't buy happiness, that's bullshit.
Or it's, money doesn't buy happiness, but it buys you a lot of things that will make you happy.
Right. Let's
say you play the lottery.
Yeah.
Because I always think about this. How would your life change?
I've thought about this before, and I never thought about it this way until, I don't remember who said it to me one time, was talking about kind of like the negative side to it. Just like the, you know, people coming out of the woodwork asking you for money, and like any time that you're driving anywhere, if people know who you are, if they're like essentially like walking in front of your car or trying to sue you for stupid shit. And yeah. I never really thought of it. I mean, I would like to think that I would be kind of like smart with it. Like, I've had these conversations with my friends and stuff. Like, if I got close friends, their houses are paid off, their debt's gone. Yeah. Like, I'm doing that. You know, we have this long going thing since like high school. This like group of us have always said, if any of us win the lottery, we're buying each, whoever wins buys the other guys their dream car or whatever.
You got that in writing?
Yeah, no. I said, this was in high school. This was a while ago. This was before debt and kids and stuff like that. So yeah. I feel like I could stick to that. I mean, not to the point where I would end up with the same amount of money that I have now because I gave it all away. But I don't know.
See, from a lifestyle standpoint, I like an easy lifestyle, so
right.
money would allow me to do things. You know, I could do my job and give it away for free. I enjoy what I do because I wouldn't have to focus on any finances or stuff like that. I'd probably set up a scholarship fund for people to go to school just because education is so ridiculous right now. But I'm not the type that needs 53 cars. I don't need multiple houses. You know, I would pay for experiences and memories. I'd go on vacation, things like that. I wouldn't buy a fancy car. I like my car. You know, and a vehicle to me is just to get me from point A to point B. Right. I'm not into cars and building engines and stuff like that. So that doesn't faze me. It would allow me to not work for the man. And then I'd probably be working out 7 days a week because that's what I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
But I always thought about it as, all right, let's say it's a $375 million jackpot.
Yeah.
I win. Do I want that press conference to announce who I am?
No. Nope. I don't want anyone to know who the fuck I am.
Realistically, in all reality,
yeah,
I do not want anyone to know, you know, and you know, and from my understanding of the law is before you even sign the ticket, you go open a trust and you put the trust on the ticket. So they okay. can't find out who you are. So you can even call it the fuck you trust. And then the newspaper says, oh, it looks like the ticket was claimed by the fuck you trust. They can't tell who you are.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But then there's the other half of me that I want to be on that news conference and I want to say F you to the world. You know, I want to be like, listen, if you didn't play a significant contributing role in my life, F yourself. Like, don't search for money. And that's, and I know that's not realistic because then it's the people that are going to try to sue you for anything little that you do.
Right.
So in all reality, I wouldn't. I'd put it in a trust. No one would know who I am. I'd still dress the exact same way.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing is that would allow me to buy more sweatshirts and more gym pants. that's real. It, maybe a couple more pairs of sneakers. But other than that, you know, it, and people are probably like, oh, you don't know until you get there.
Yeah.
True. Absolutely true. But if I enjoy my life the way I live now, I mean,
right.
think of all the money I could have in my bank account and still live the same way.
Yep. I definitely feel like I would buy a couple, like.
I'd probably build my own home gym.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like what would be cool is it would allow me to, you know, like you talked about building engines and stuff like that. Like that's, I have no idea how to do that. But it's always something that I've, like, kind of fantasize that I think it would be super cool to learn how to do, because I've always enjoyed like doing things with my, I feel like it would be cool, you know, if I didn't necessarily have to work in that same way to be able to like do stuff like that, you know, like not, you know, spend money for the sake of spending money, but to be able to like pursue things that I've had, I don't even want to say like a passing interest, because I a little bit more than that, but I've always thought would be cool to learn or do, or, you know, that I don't have the ability to do now. If anything, it's just time-wise, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, similar to you, like you talked about with your friends, you know, there are people that played significant roles in my life where I'd like to show up and I'd say, well, your mortgage just got paid off.
Yep.
Congratulations.
That would be literally my, if I won the lottery, that would be my favorite part.
Yep.
Would be being able to show up to a friend's house or whatever and be like, yeah, you got the your mortgage insurance company's information? Yep. Okay. Well, it's paid off now. You own the house. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, even for me, it would be the ability to just call up, pay it, and not even tell them.
Yeah.
That would
be awesome. Right. Yeah.
Even. And then they get a letter in the mail that says, congratulations, you paid off your mortgage, and they have no idea.
Yep. I'd be totally fine with that.
Yeah. You know, or the ability to someone who's going into college for something and maybe they can't afford it. It's like, all right, well, your college is paid for. Congrats. Right. You know, just maintain your grades. You're all set.
Yep.
So I think the ability to have money and put it towards something like that would be fun.
Yeah.
You know, fulfilling.
Yeah.
You know, you're helping people, you know, get ahead in life and, you know, especially with the way things are right now, you know, it's hard to see what life is going to be like in 10, 20, 30, or even 40 years. So any way that you can make someone else's life easier in the process,
right?
Why not?
Yeah, I completely agree. All right, so let's move on to just some like kind of basic questions here. So favorite sports movie?
Slapshot.
Slapshot? Oh, Slapshot's a great movie.
Oh, it's, I mean, I think anyone who grew up playing hockey, that's just got to be one of your favorites. I was young the first time I saw it. There's a lot of swearing in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that alone just sets it off for me. Paul Newman was awesome as the player coach, Reggie Dunlap. So I always go back to that. You know, even when Disney made Miracle, you know, I forget what year that was. You know, that one's another big one. So there's a lot of them that are up there. Even if you look at Angels in the Outfield.
Yep.
I mean, that's a classic from our childhood.
I wore out the VHS of Angels in the Outfield. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely a classic. Mighty Ducks, the original one. I mean, that's... So, as you can see, there's a lot of hockey movies, but, you know, then we start to get into, like, Rookie of the Year with Dennis Quaid. Mm-hmm. That's another good one.
Yep.
And I'm sure there's plenty more that I'm missing. You know, even when you look at... it was the one with Mark Wahlberg. He played the guy for
the fighter.
The Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, Invincible.
Invincible.
Yeah,
I thought that was a really good one. That had a good message. Coach Carter.
Yep, that's a great movie too.
Samuel Jackson. I think that's a really good one. These are ones that I'll watch all the time. It doesn't matter how many times that I've seen them. So How about you?
Mine actually is Miracle.
Yeah.
I love Miracle. Like, this, it's funny, like, Cold War stuff aside, that was my next, you know, whatever, I'm not going to get into that, but that's something that I wish I could have experienced.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I said, Cold War and all that stuff aside, because I know it was a time of, like, fear and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But that, I don't know. I just, that's my favorite movie, by far, my favorite sport movie.
And when you think about it, you know, that, the Miracle, we're only seeing it from the standpoint of someone else's point of view.
Right.
You know, because that happened in 1980. That was before you and I were born.
Right.
I would hear the stories from my mother, you know, and she would tell me about the 70s and the gas shortage and how, depending on, had something to do with your license plate or something like that, depended on when you went and got gas, and, mm-hmm. and you know, it was really something that the country needed. You know, it kind right. of pulled everyone together, and to see a group of kids actually do that, especially to the Russians,
yeah.
who people weren't necessarily happy with at the time, you know, it was nice to be able to live that moment through a Disney movie.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, all the actors did a great job, and you know, you can't help but feel goosebumps when they win, even when you see it 75 times,
right.
like I have.
So. Oh yeah, that call, that Al Michaels call.
Yeah.
When he's counting it down, because in the movie it's the, I mean, you, for those of you that haven't seen it, the movie is the actual, like, it's the actual countdown from the actual game at the yeah. end, and it's just like, yeah, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's one of the better movies out there. So. It's one you just stay glued to it the whole
yeah.
time. It's not one that you're going to doze off to.
Right.
So, and there's plenty of movies that I've seen them 100 times and I purposely watch them to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, it's like I'm getting jacked up the yep. whole time. Blood pressure's going up.
Yep.
And I feel like I am one with the characters.
The other one that have you seen Warrior?
Sounds familiar. Who's in it?
I think his name is Joel Edgerton. He's you recognize if you saw him. He's and Tom Hardy. So they're brothers. It's an MMA movie.
I haven't seen it, but I heard
it's,
of it.
You should see, it's probably one of my favorite movies, yeah, period.
I love Tom
so
Hardy.
Good. Me too.
He's awesome, especially in Venom.
Yep.
Great in those movies. He's just a good actor. He was yeah. good as Bane.
I loved him as Bane.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
It was the first time I ever watched a Batman movie, and I'm like, this like legit like puts fear into me. I could see this happening.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that someone thought about that. That's how messed up we are.
I know, right?
So,
okay, so I kind of gets me to the next favorite sporting event you've ever watched in person or on TV.
So, I love hockey. I really, really do. But I feel like the games are all the same. So, I actually prefer going to Celtics games over Bruins games.
Okay.
I like hockey more than basketball.
Yeah.
But I just feel like the Celtics do a better job of putting on the entertainment around the game.
Yeah.
I enjoy watching basketball. I like it a lot. So if someone said to me right now, you know, what sporting event of the Boston sports do you want to go see? I would still say the Celtics because I feel like they do a good job. On TV, I like watching football.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't necessarily... I've been to Foxborough a couple times when it was super cold, and that kind of put a bad taste in my mouth. So it's like, if I stay away from there, unless I'm in a suite that's heated,
right?
Keep me away from it. So now I will say, I went to the year that the Bruins won the Stanley Cup, 2011.
Mm-hmm.
I went to game four, and
yep.
I think they were down 3-1 at that point.
Yeah.
Or 2-1,
whatever
the math was. And they ended up winning. I think it was a shutout. But the atmosphere was unlike anything I ever felt. That you could literally feel electricity in the air.
Yeah.
I've never felt it. It was loud. And I've been to plenty of Bruins games. And that by far had the best feel that I've ever been to in a sporting venue. That was something that I'll never forget.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
So I think that it probably would have been the Super Bowl against the Falcons had I not.
I was already too angry to enjoy
it. Yep.
That took years off my life.
Yep, it did. I remember it's gone now. It was cursed. The jersey I had was cursed. It was a Hightower. It was the red one. And I had worn it 4 times prior to that. I had worn it the game against it was the same year, the game against the Dolphins. They lost the opening Well, that was the first time I ever wore it.
Yeah.
Second time was the opening game against the Chiefs where they got blown out.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that year?
Oh, yeah.
And then the third time, I refused to wear it because, like, it's cursed. And then that year when they played the Jags in the championship game, I wore it until halftime, and I got so pissed, I took it off, and I threw it in the garbage. They won that game. Kristen pulled it out of the garbage, so then I wore it for the Super Bowl, and we got to halftime, and then there was that, I don't remember, know if you remember the, it was the catch by Julio Jones along the sideline over Malcolm Butler,
yeah.
And I'm like, done! I took it, I grabbed it by the collar, and I ripped it down the middle, ripped the back so there was no saving it, I threw it out, man. And I went to bed. I missed the entire comeback. She came back, she came and got me, when they were going into overtime, she's like, they're going into overtime. Like, nope, I don't care. They're going to lose it. Nope, I'm done. I'm not doing it. And then she came back and she's like, I was half asleep at this point, and I'd finally like calmed down enough to fall asleep. They won. Do you want to come out? And like, you kidding me? Like, and then at that point too, it's like, well, I guess I can't watch the game. They're going to come back 21-3 when I go to bed. So yeah. Screw it. I'm not going to watch the game. I guess I can't watch the game. And then I just watched it on replay. Yeah, but
I can remember I was so upset. I was pacing back and forth. And then I feel like I just went numb. And I was so angry.
Yeah.
I turned the game off. I was watching other things. And we had people over. And they were like, oh, they just scored a touchdown. I'm like, I don't care.
Right.
F them. I don't care. And they're like, they scored another touchdown. I can't even be happy for them. I can't even be, they pissed me off. And they're like, they scored again. I'm like, all right, I'll turn it back on. But I'm not rooting for them. And then they fucking tie the game. So now I'm up pacing. I'm coaching them at this point.
Yeah.
I'm like, if I had a landline to Bill Belichick, I'd call him right now. This is what you need to do. I'm pacing back and forth. And then I just absolutely erupted when they scored in overtime. I had my Brady jersey on and, because I always wear that one, and I was just spinning it in the air, and I'm hooting and hollering, but just the amount of emotions that you go through.
Yeah.
So it's like the stages of death. Like, I went through all of them that day.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why, if there are weeks that I miss football because life is busy and I can't watch it, it's probably better off. Because I know that I don't run the risk of having a cardiac event.
Yep. I think my favorite one, though, was the... A few years before that, my roommate at the time and I went to go see the Pats play the Saints at Gillette. And he was a big Saints fan. I was a Pats fan. That's why we went. And it was the game where, with zero time left on the clock, Kembrell Tompkins caught...
Back of the end zone.
Back of the end zone. I was at that game. And it was... That was easily the best because it was like the place exploded. And... The best part is, so my buddy's sitting next to me in a Saints jersey, and I'm sitting. So we went like, because the Saints had just marched down the field and scored to take the lead.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a, you know, 4 or 5 point game. Like, they couldn't even kick a field goal. They had to score a touchdown. So we went from, like, me being, like, stoked because they made a couple stops, and then they scored. The Saints scored. And so I'm sitting down the seat like, fuck, game over. And he's, like, up, like, cheering. And then, like, just a complete reversal.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, that was easily the best. On that final play, it was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that one clearly. It's just so funny how we remember those things.
Right.
Can't remember what I had for breakfast, but I can remember that.
Yep.
You know, I always think back to like 2007 when Randy Moss was on the team, and I just run through all of his touchdowns.
Yeah.
I think about the Miami game when he was caught it in double coverage in the end zone twice. Yep. And there was another one he caught against Buffalo where he caught it down the sideline one-handed in the end zone. And so it's just like, it's funny how we remember those things, but I may not pack a lunch for RJ. I mean, it's just, that's never happened.
I know.
There are times I forgot his drink, though.
It's basically the same thing.
Yeah, it's not the, I mean, to him it is.
I know, that's what I mean.
To me, it's like, geez, can't you just get a drink from the...
They don't have water there?
Yeah. Well, it's like, can't you just go to the bubbla? What's that? I'm like, oh. Yeah, I don't know if they call that here. Water fountain? So, it's just kind of funny.
All right, so let's get back into some exercise type stuff. So, what's your favorite type of training? Like, way to train? Whether it be, so let's categorize it a little bit. Like, strength, metabolic, endurance, running, so, whatever.
So, I would say all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every day is going to be a little bit different, and I don't want to necessarily say CrossFit style training. There's always going to be a focus to it. Typically, what I like is full body training.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I try to work out 3 up to 5 days a week, depending on intensity. But usually I try to have some type of, and this is dependent upon time. If I have 25 to 35 minutes, I'll usually start with a strength exercise. And that's where, you know, some type of a press variation, squat variation, something like that goes first, that it's only that exercise. Mm. And then with the remaining time, you know, 10, 12, 15 minutes, I'll usually do as many rounds as possible. And I'll do basically circuit style training with barbells or body weight style. But the goal is to fit in as much volume as possible. So if I only have 10 to 15 minutes to work out, I skip the strength and I just go basically for the exercise progressions that are basically going to kick my ass in the shortest amount of time.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about before, work capacity, efficiency, you know, really I'm just trying to beat myself up to create an adaptation. So, you know, if I had to full body strength plus metabolic conditioning, you know, if I had to lump it into 1 to 2 categories.
Yeah. And I think I feel pretty similarly. Again, complex movements, that's my bread and butter all day. I mean, that's the way that I write training, that's the way that I train, that's the way that you train, that's what we talk about all the time. But, and I think I have training ADHD. I have a hard time. I can stick with, if I find a program that, like, I can really get into, I can do it for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, progressing it here or there or whatever, but if I try to go like back to that same program like a couple months later, like let's say I do some other stuff and then I'm like, oh, that program worked really well, and I try to go back to it, I have a hard time sticking to it the same level. But yeah, so I think I tend to either, you know, just circuit style like you talked about, where I'm going from one exercise to the next to the next to the next. Or, you know, more strictly strength, that like almost 4 to 6 reps, something where I'm not, you know, doing a, I don't know if it's just a boredom thing. I don't know, where like, you know, if a 10 to 12 rep scheme on every exercise, I'm just like, Jesus Christ, this set of single leg deadlifts is taking me 5 minutes because I got to do 10 on one side and 10 on the other. And after the, you know, 4 sets in, I'm losing my balance every third rep because I'm fatiguing. And so I get bored just because it takes so long.
And with that circuit style, what I'll typically try to do is I'll vary my rep scheme with it. So maybe the first exercise in the group is maybe 3 to 5 repetitions.
Right.
Then the next one might be 5 to 10, and then the next one maybe 10 to 20.
Yep.
You know, but the skill or technique required, you know, with the last exercise is going to be a lot less, just because I'm doing a lot higher repetition, whereas the first one, It's a more technical lift, so I don't want to run the risk of killing myself.
Right, exactly. And I'll try and, like, you know, if I know that, like, for example, single leg deadlifts is a good example of something, like, if it's something that I know that if I do 10 reps of it is going to take me a while, that's the thing that I'll cut the reps a little bit and I'll increase something else that, basically what you just said, just that's a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
You know, like, 10 squat jumps is a lot faster than 10 step ups on each side, you know, so I'll kind of vary it that way too. So what do you think is the most overrated piece of exercise equipment? Think something that you would find it, like, not necessarily like at a commercial gym that has maybe a little bit of everything. Like, not like here where we have a ton of kettlebells and dumbbells and some barbells, but not like machines, whereas...
Yeah, I would say if we're looking at a commercial gym, I'd say the Smith machine is definitely overrated. You know, there's a time and a place for it, but when I see people doing a bench press with 315 on the Smith machine, it's like, go do that on the free weights and let's see what your real bench is. Or when I see people squatting on it, doing a hairy half rep, it's like, no, I understand there's a time and a place for it, but I just think it's overvalued, overrated. People would be better off not using it at all. What about you?
I kind of go, because my first, from most of the commercial gyms around here, I'm kind of torn, because I would pick a BOSU ball just because most people that use a BOSU ball at a commercial gym are doing God knows what. We talked about that a little bit.
Sure.
Aren't really using it the way it's supposed to be, or I don't even want to say the way it's supposed to be, but like putting the cart before the horse kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
you don't need instability if you can't even do an exercise with stability. So I tend to lean there. Back extensions, just because most people don't understand the true reason for that exercise or the way to do it correctly.
Yeah.
You know, because it's really supposed to be more of a glute hamstring type, you know, it's basically like a reverse hinge.
Yeah.
Not reverse. I mean, it is a hinge, no, but
if you set it up correctly.
Right, right. But if you're not, then you can run into awk, and people will, you know, I mean, I used to do it, grab a weight down, back up.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, I probably was doing it a little bit better than, you know, what I tend to see with people just like collapsing up and down. But yeah.
And the goal ideally would be to hyperextend or return from flexion just to get back to neutral.
Right.
It's when the people hyperextend that's when it poses the problem.
Yeah.
So again, I think there's a time and a place for it, you know, but again, I'd rather just see people do deadlifts.
Yep.
You know, any type of a deadlift. I don't care what it is. They're very safe and they're also self-correcting. If you do one of those variations wrong, it's going to tell you.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're looking at a bent knee deadlift or Romanian,
mm-hmm.
that's one of the easiest ways to tell if you're doing it right or wrong, because really all you're doing is the weight should go up and down.
Yep.
And the hips go back and forth.
Yep.
You know, there's no other movement that needs to be involved. So right. as long as, you know, you keep those two lines of force perpendicular to each other, it's a very, very safe exercise.
So what exercise that you've, and I don't know exactly how to draw the line here, is kind of, I don't want to say, I mean, I guess I could say the dumbest, but like the least necessary, like why are you doing that? And obviously, I don't know where to draw the line here, because obviously we can just make crap up. Most people have seen that random photo that goes around Facebook every once in a while of like the guy with the bar on his back, like a back squat, standing on a yoga ball or a Swiss ball. Yeah. Like, obviously that's dumb, but I just mean like of things that you may typically see at like a, in quotes, commercial gym. Maybe not Planet Fitness where you don't have, but like at a place where people are...
Yeah, working like, out.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, I always, outside of like figure skating and gymnastics, I never understood what a pistol squat's going to be used for. You know, and I understand it shows great stability and mobility, and there's a lot of people that can't do them. But if you actually watch someone do a pistol squat, they get all the way down into the bottom of that motion and they bounce out of it.
Mm-hmm.
They use momentum. So I think there's a time and a place, but when I'm looking at doing a single leg squat assessment, I want more of like a skater squat,
mm-hmm.
where the leg is going to be behind them. It's a more functional position. So I think from my standpoint, as far as rehabbing the leg or at least using it as an assessment, you know, I think the pistol squat's more of a circus trick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like squatting on a stability ball. You know, is it cool? Sure. Is it going to increase my performance? Probably not. You know, and again, this is not taking away anyone that can do a pistol squat.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't do one, but I also don't want to. You know, I see how people use momentum, and I just fear that their knee is going to become the victim because they get down, they bounce out of the bottom,
yeah.
and that becomes the issue. So I would say for me, that's probably one of the biggest... another overrated or misused tools that I can see.
Yeah. For me, and I don't know, maybe you can change my mind. I've never seen... This to me is one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. And I don't know if there's... there's probably a reason for it in powerlifting or in... I don't know. I can't understand why you would possibly need to do it, but deficit deadlifts. Where you're standing on a set of 45-pound bumper plates, so elevating yourself a good 3 or 4, 5 inches off the ground, and then pulling from the floor. So I've seen people that are pulling from just above their, like, the tongues of their shoes.
Yeah.
And I just, and not every person I've seen is, you know, they're in hyperflexion and just driving up into, I mean, I guess maybe if you're crazy mobile and you can get into that position and pull with a neutral spine, but I just, to me, it seems like the dumbest exercise ever.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't have a good reason for it. I know a lot of people that will add those into their programs. The only thing that I can think of is that, you know, they potentially are working on kind of a stretch response at the bottom to increase pulling power. But even then, I'm not sure. You know, for me, we've talked about this a lot with deadlifts in general.
Yeah.
You know, getting that bar down to the ground, especially for someone whose hips are too high or someone who doesn't have ankle mobility or someone that has an increased lordosis, they're generally going to not be able to have a neutral spine position at that bottom portion
right.
before they initiate the pull. So unless you're guaranteed that that's perfect, it's stable, you know, it's an ideal textbook posture or position, I wouldn't purposely put them into a bad position next, because all they're going to do is they're probably going to butt wink a little bit more, and they're probably going to flex from their lower thoracic spine to make up for it.
Yeah.
You know, which they have to come out of that position, which creates more extension right at that same junction zone.
Yeah.
So I can't promise I would ever give someone that, you know, I'd have to look into more the why of doing it, and it would have to still convince me that the reward is greater than the risk.
All right, and we'll bump quickly through these last two I have here. So what do you think is what is an exercise that you love? Like that it'll, you know, that whether it's from a rehab standpoint on top, like something that crosses a lot of, or checks off a lot of boxes from rehab to strength training, or just that, like, you know, that you know is super important, or, you know, whatever.
So for the upper extremity, I would actually use push-ups. It's okay. Simple. It's really just a plank position, but your arms are moving, so it's a little bit more dynamic. It's a weight-bearing exercise for the upper extremity, which has been shown to improve motor control, so stabilization of the mm-hmm. rotator cuff, assuming you set yourself up perfectly and you have the right arm angle away from your trunk. So I start people off with push-ups right away. You know, we have to get them into a good position. But I also think there's a lot of carryover for a lot of people that can't do a lot of pressing movements, especially with a dumbbell or a barbell, if for some reason they have issues with overhead stuff. And then I think getting them into that weight-bearing position, they can still actually go through and build a lot of strength with that, because you can add resistance bands. So I think that's a good one to go from the rehab perspective into your performance spectrum. And then for the lower extremity, I think lunges are just a great exercise. When we really look at functional movement, we're usually in asymmetrical stance, and that's what a lunge will do for us. A lot of people, when they have knee pain, they lunge poorly, so that's why they have knee pain. So correcting it is always good for them, because it's going to help them transfer on and off the ground a little bit easier. A lot of older adults don't lunge, so then getting off the ground becomes harder. So the sooner that I can get someone into a good lunging pattern and I keep them there, it's going to be better for when they need to get on and off the ground. It's going to create efficiency. Also, if they fall and they need to get back up, they can get back into a lunge position. The legs are much stronger than the arm, so okay. You know, let's use the legs. But then I also like the lunge is very easy to modify, create variations. It's very easy to load, and I just think it's a very good performance-based exercise, because it shows you asymmetry side to side, and it's very easy to show how the quads and the glutes work together, and you can hit the hamstrings because now it's an antagonist. So I think the lunge is a very beneficial exercise that people don't do enough of.
Yeah. I think if I had to pick, I mean, not using, because I love both of those too, but using a different, not using the same ones, I think one of my favorite upper extremity ones that we actually don't get to do a ton of in here, just like based on like equipment and spacing and that kind of stuff, is like a three quarters, like a landmine press.
Mm-hmm.
Then the reason that I like that is because A, you know, if somebody has trouble actually going into an actual overhead press, or even has shoulder pain on a, you know, horizontal press, mm-hmm. it allows for a little bit more stability, because there's that extra point of contact. So yes, you have to stabilize the bar side to side,
yep.
but you don't have to stabilize it as much vertically as well.
Yep.
And it also, it's not like when you do a bench press, anything is really trapped, but it does add that extra ability to, especially for me from a coaching standpoint, be able to coach them a little bit more on their shoulder blade mechanics.
Yep.
Because you can come right, you know, right to the side of someone, and you can put your hand right on their shoulder blade and say, as you press, I want the shoulder blade to do this. And just, you know, pressing out and getting that last little, the other thing that I like is it tends to help with that last little serratus engagement, that last little reach,
mm-hmm.
and to teach them to think, to reach forward rather than shrugging up
yep.
when they reach. And also you can use it to create, you know, again, it's kind of that middleman shoulder stability wise, because you don't have to stabilize as much as, you know, a dumbbell press or something like that. And, you know, if you do it split stance, you can add a little bit of, like, overall stability in there, too. Mm-hmm. Just all kinds of awesome stuff. And I think lower extremity, mine's a single leg deadlift, if I'm not going to choose lunges. Because, again, that single leg stance, that balance, that stability. And, you know, it's relatively easy to help stay, to give somebody, to make them feel comfortable. I just put them near a wall.
Yeah.
And you just say, like, okay, if you're starting to lose your balance, just touch the wall. You know, it's easy to build some stability, but it's still very safe, and it's...
Yeah, and from a rehab standpoint, I use that one quite often.
Yep.
You know, I think it's great because you can work on ankle, knee, hip stabilization. It works on trunk control, and you can load it very easily. You know, it's one of those exercises that, yes, I can make it much easier if I need to, but also I can make this much more challenging if I need to. So I would certainly agree with both of those.
Yeah, so let's see. I had one more on here. And it's funny because I don't actually know if I have a fantastic answer for this one personally. But if you could travel back in time and tell yourself and give yourself one piece of advice starting your professional career. So like fresh out of school, you're just starting. What would that piece of advice be?
Don't settle.
Don't settle?
Don't settle. Always push to be better. You know, don't take the first job that comes across your way. You know, don't just become another Muppet. Don't, you know, and it took me a while to learn this, you know, don't let the puppet master pull the strings, you know, have a head on your shoulders, you know, go out there and be awesome. I mean, it took me a couple years of getting thrown into the mix and learning the backside of what the profession's all about, having to deal with insurance and all that. So, you know, start your own business sooner. You know, don't wait 10 years to do it. You know, so that's probably the don't settle would probably be it. Because I enjoy what I do and I enjoyed my schooling. But that, you know, all right, you passed your license. You're able to see patients now. Next step, don't settle. Be more. And if I could tell myself that 10 years ago, you know, I would have liked to have think it would have sped me up to the point that I'm at now, but I wouldn't have had to have waited a decade to get there.
Right.
How about you?
I think for me, it would be that for sure. But after that, it would be, you know, do the work, like learn, and then trust your instincts. I definitely think that it's really only been over the last couple years that I've actually, even though like I did as much continuing education of it as I did and, you know, had the conversations with people that I have and done this or that, I feel like it's only been over the last like year or two that I've really started to kind of like, oh, maybe I actually do know what the hell I'm talking about. You know what I mean?
Some of the answers to the test.
Right. And you know, there's a difference between, you know, being humble but still believing in your knowledge base versus just, you know, there are a lot of, especially in these ones, we come out of school, you know, thinking, oh, we just graduated with a 4-year degree. We know what the fuck. Well, me and then you with an 8-year degree. Oh, we know fucking everything.
Yeah.
Hire me. I know everything. And then you get in, you're like, oh, wow, yeah, I don't know shit.
The first year you question your ability, you start questioning if you chose the right field.
Right.
And yeah, we've all been there. So here's a question for you then. I know that was your last one. What do you feel separates you from other strength coaches?
What I think personally separates me is that I don't get bogged down in minutia or in one specific thing. I am always open to, if you, and we've talked about this before, if you show me something that's better, fine. If it's different than what I do but it works better, I don't care. In the end, my ability to help somebody is the most important part. If what I'm doing is not the best version, if I could be doing something that, you know, if this exercise... Okay, here, let me give you a perfect example. So short lever push-ups, kneeling push-ups. For the longest time, nope, we're not doing kneeling push-ups. And, you know, we'll do rolling patterns and all this other stuff to help, you know, sit... Yeah, until like I remember specifically you had a conversation with a client when you before you started here about kneeling push-ups, and I started okay, well, if he said that, then maybe this isn't that big of a deal. And so we started doing short lever push-ups, and the fucking push-ups people went through the roof.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and I won't get until, yes, I stay in my lane until somebody gives me a reason to like think otherwise. But as soon as like I have a reason to believe that I need to improve something here or there, or do something differently, I'm not getting caught in that trap of not of sticking with what I've always done, and I'm never gonna. That's what I'm always gonna do. And I think that's, you know, people get into their, oh, I'm all about kettlebells. Oh, I only do barbells. Oh, I only do this. I only do that. No, I'm not gonna do that.
I heard early on in my career, which really stuck with me, is that if in 20 years you're still doing the same treatments, you've done something wrong. You know, your philosophy should never change, you know, but your treatments will. Okay, so I can buy that. And I think that's important from your standpoint to recognize that. And any good strength coach, any coach in general, any clinician should do that the same, you know. And I think one of the things that sets me apart from other PTs is that I'm not willing to give up on a given exercise or a motor pattern and I think I'm willing to go against the norm. Yep. You know, I like to think outside the box a little bit more, and I'm not saying that other PTs don't do this, but I've created an environment for myself that I have the freedom to do so. I don't have anyone telling me that I can't do this and I can't do that. You know, and the way I treated people when I was in network, I treated them similar to how I do now, and if insurance actually read my notes, I could have been fined a lot of money because I was doing things that I shouldn't have been based on insurance rules, but right. I didn't care because I was doing what was best for the patient in front of me. So I have the ability to really do that, to listen to the person, really listen to their goals, get their perspective, and again, I don't think I get bogged down in the weeds either. You know, I keep it simple, keep it practical. You know, regardless of what someone's diagnosis is, let's see how you move and let's build you up.
Right.
So keeping it simple is sometimes the easy way to go.
Yep.
So.
All right. Well, so that kind of sets it for our Get to Know You episode. You guys know the drill. If you have any questions, please reach out to myself or Ross. Our email address, my email address, which will go to either of us, is in the description of the episode, as well as a link to Ross's Fit for Life Facebook page, where he does an Ask Ross Everything at 7:30 on 7:30 Eastern Time on Thursday nights. So you can get in there, as well as a link to his Wellevate account if you're interested in supplements for, you know, whatever your needs may be, protein, multivitamins, all that kind of good stuff. I know he's got way more than that, but just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about specifically. That link's in there too. Until next time, guys, remember, so this will be coming out Thursday night for a while. Thursday night, Friday morning is when those the new episodes will come out. And until next week, I will see you later. And
take care, guys. Have a good one.
Later, guys.